once more under the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English day.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And this week in the news, the blimp that snagged in the trees in, was it Pennsylvania?
I believe it was Pennsylvania.
So the Pennsylvania slimp flagging blimp. The tree snagged blimp of Pennsylvania. I saw astronomers were having a lot of fun with this, and I am also an astronomer in addition to an economist because my brain was not far enough out of this world. We're getting a big kick out of the fact that apparently on CNN, I watched the clip, there was a breathless announcer saying that their sources at NORAD, their officials at NORAD had confirmed that the helium has certain flammable qualities. the point is that, yeah, it was full of helium. Hydrogen burns. Helium doesn't burn. You can't. Actually, it will. At about 100,000 degrees Celsius, it will actually fuse and create.
We know that helium rises. It's lighter than air.
Mm-hmm.
If it rises far enough, it could get to the sun, and it's hot enough there to make it flammable.
Actually, it's not. The point is that it's hydrogen that's burning. It's hydrogen that's
fusing. Right.
And the helium really isn't. It's creating helium, and at some point, there's no question. We just hope the sun doesn't get hot enough at its surface to fuse helium, because if it does, it would be a red giant. If it was a red giant, we would be inside of it, and we'd all be dead. So there is a threat from this balloon, in that if the sun were hot enough to burn the helium in the balloon,
we'd all be dead.
We'd all be dead.
Yes.
So CNN was very, very upset about that, about the imminent threat, according to NORAD, of a radar-bearing balloon snagged in the trees to cause us all to be dead.
Right.
Which now tells you something about television news in general.
Right.
Anyway, you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach, and if today is Halloween, October 31st, 2015, then you can give us a call in here if you're local in the East Bell County area at 773-1400, or
you can also reach us toll-free at 1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
See, we're talking about the markets, how in the month of October, the stock markets in general rose about 8%, which in terms of points, the S&P 500 and the Dow broke all previous records in the number of points they rose for the month of October. And this is the most the markets have risen since October, this is not a coincidence, of 2011. And there's a lot of things that happened that contributed to that. Not the least of which was, and I know some people are not going to like this, this is one of those cases where politics had a lot to do with the market.
Yep.
Paul Ryan was elected as the Speaker of the House, but as a condition for him running as Speaker of the House, he had put the House Republicans on alert that they had to deal with the budget issues and pass a two-year budget plan and stop using the limit on borrowing, the borrowing ceiling, the debt ceiling of the United States, as a weapon and threatening to shut down the government, or he simply wouldn't run for Speaker. And somebody somewhere got sane all of a sudden and decided that they wouldn't say that the best way to reduce spending is to not pay the bills we've already run up, which, boy, is that a dumb way of reducing spending. In any rate, so we basically have a two-year truce where the Congress of the United States agreed not to blow up the government for the next 2 years, and the markets liked that a lot.
For good reason.
And we had another event that occurred. The U.S. 10-year Treasury dropped the most it has dropped since June, which is not a big thing, but it's because interest rates went up on the two-year Treasury, and the probability of the Federal Reserve raising interest rates 0.25%, as if that is a big thing, which it isn't, we're now set at 50-50. I hope they do. I hope they do a one what are they calling it? One and forget it. In other words, they come up with a statement, yep, we're going to raise interest rates technically right now. The Federal Reserve has set short-term interbank loan rates at 0 to 0.25.
Right.
Now, of a percent. I would like them to say, okay, 0.25, and that's it. We're not even going to look at it for another year. And at that point, the markets, well, for one thing, if you're invested in a media company like Murdoch's, whatever it's called, media company, your stock may fall because all of the financial pundits will run out of about 80% of what they've been talking about for the last several years. The Federal Reserve says, okay, we're going to raise interest rates 0.25%, and that's it for the next year. Then all of a sudden, all of those news reporters are going to get laid off who do nothing but speculate about what the Federal Reserve is going to do.
They'll just go to speculating about something else. My microphone is really not doing well.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah. It's like everything else in here, you know.
Here's something. It sounds like a change of the subject. It is. It's going back to a prior subject of fusion, energy fusion. And if you're talking about long-term effects on the economy, this is a step further out than the Federal Reserve. Let's take it from they're looking at, you know, currency solutions for a while and market solutions for a short period, and something that has been completely off of the mainstream media, because mostly mainstream people are not nerds, is the progress of fusion reactors. Have you followed this at all?
Yes, I do. But I also found something even more interesting, but go ahead.
I'm not sure it can be more interesting.
Well, I found something really fascinatingly interestingly interesting.
Okay. Well, in fusion, there are four private companies, and not for profit, but it's like they're private companies, and there's four of them that are working on fusion plants.
So they're not for profit, for private. For private, not for profit.
Right. They are
fours in that sense.
They are for profit. They are working towards
for profit.
They are for profit. Four companies are for profit, trying to make fusion work, and all four of them have demonstrated net gains in energy efficiency. The large corporations, these really really big corporations and government conglomerations that have been working on this for a while, a few years back, were the first to say, when you push two atoms together, you can get a net gain in energy. And I realize we're talking silliness here. What it is it's nuclear reaction without ripping things apart, instead by pushing them together, like what happens in the sun. And the sun is just a big fusion reactor. The idea here, though, is that it's taking hydrogen, which is a pretty common element.
It is the common element.
Yes, it is the most common element.
There's huge clouds of it in space.
There's huge clouds of it on Earth, too, that's just mixed with oxygen.
Yeah, they're in the ocean is
it's
two hydrogen.
Dense clouds, right. Dense clouds are oceans and the clouds in the sky. So it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
And if you fuse it together, the cost of the material to fuse is tiny. Each of these,
you just have to get it really, really hot before you do that.
Right. Each of these companies on their own privately, not part of the big government conglomeration, and much smaller, cheaper plants are saying that they're getting net gains. And they're getting net gains in a more and more efficient way, so that the speculation is that 15 years from now, it may be normal to get power from fusion, and 30 years from now, it will probably be the only way you get power, because it will be much, much cheaper than any other option. So people that are trying to get off of fossil fuels, stop burning coal and whatever, what we have said over a huge period of time is the government doesn't need to be involved in getting us off of fossil fuels. Fossil fuel, by their definition, it costs too much to get it out of the ground, even when the prices have dropped. So fusion, long-term, is the solution, because people want to pay less for energy. That's what causes energy reform, not the government jumping in and saying, I'm going to spend $12 billion.
Well, there's a nice little article today, by the way, that noted that in the Permian Basin, Still drilling in Texas. They're still drilling new fracking wells.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's still profitable.
At current prices, they have a 35% profit margin on a well they drill.
Yeah, the Permian Basin is a much better place for drilling for fracking than in North Dakota. But even there, they're able to get, in some places, a 15% profit margin. So it's still happening.
A couple of things I want to talk about. Number one.
What is this fascinating thing? I want to hear that.
Well, okay, let's talk about the fascinating thing. This is relatively, there are basically two categories of things we like to talk about. The things that are immediate, like, for example, I was going to talk about the Treasury yields again because I think it's immediate and very significant. But there's something else that happened at Cambridge. It was announced this week. Are you familiar with that?
With Cambridge?
Cambridge University.
Of campuses somewhere in that vicinity. Yep.
They have developed a super battery that has five times the capacity or one-fifth the weight, however you want to approach it, as a lithium-ion battery that's used today. And the people have been able to do that before. The problem is that you recharge them a couple of times and they stop being efficient. This particular battery that they have developed has a 90% efficiency. Now, that is absurdly high compared with like a lead-acid battery, which has about a 30% efficiency at best, sometimes a 12% efficiency. In other words, every time you put a watt into this battery, 0.9 watts are stored. There's only a 10% loss, which is a huge advantage over anything else that's been seen out there. Secondly, because of the weight-to-charge ratio in this particular battery, you could substitute the weight of a tank of fuel for the new battery at the same weight, same volume, and you could drive all day on one charge at highway speeds.
That's pretty cool.
In a small car.
Yeah, driving all day at highway speeds with a tank of fuel, you can't drive all day of fuel.
The point is that... Now, these are small, very efficient cars we're talking about. But basically what they're saying is that they finally have a battery, at least they have the technology that is tested and works for a battery that can effectively replace the internal combustion engine for most people who drive small cars to and from work and around town.
So one more addition here. So we've talked about fusion. Now we talked about batteries. And the last big one, so this has been a big week for announcements. The researchers from the National University of Singapore have just produced a microchip.
Good.
No big deal. Microchips are nice. Okay, no big deal. They come out all the time. Except that they're using graphene.
There's graphene in this battery too.
Right.
By the way, only is a recent invention itself. It was invented in Manchester, England.
This graphene chip is 200 times more sensitive than silicon, and cheaper, much cheaper.
Does that mean we have to use our language very carefully around it because it's so sensitive?
It's very sensitive. It's a very PC.
Okay.
Did you see what I did with the PC?
Oh, I like that. That was very good.
I had to point it out again. Anyway, that means that we can increase the speed by 200 times for the same size or make it 200 times smaller and have the same effect. So think about we're having chips in our phones and so on, and think of it 200 times smaller. We're talking about something at that speed 200 times smaller or 200 times faster at the same size.
I'm impressed.
That's pretty cool. And you would throw in a battery that can last for forever on that and a small amount of power because that sensitivity means a lower power.
All depends on your definition of ever.
All right. So what we're talking about some good stuff, and the future looks great.
Mm-hmm. And we have a caller on 773-1400, so the short-term future looks great. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, I tuned in late. You guys were talking about oil and all that. Do you know if the United States has a strategic plan to be self-sufficient with all the North Dakota oil and fracking? Why don't we just produce our own and go tell the Middle East to go pack sand. I'll hang up and listen.
Go pack sand.
I think they know how to do that there.
I think it's what they do.
Yeah, it's important there to pack sand.
The problem with what you just suggested, Congress tried to do, and I've said this the last time I said this on the radio, John Carter walked in immediately afterwards, but maybe he will this time. I don't know. Congress in progress, con is the opposite of pro is the opposite of con. So what is the opposite of Congress? It'd be progress, and progress is the opposite of Congress. Congress passed a law back in the 70s, and they are sticking to it, whether it makes any sense or not, that we cannot export oil, which is
crude oil.
Crude oil, which is really stupid. Let me explain why. That's like saying, well, you know, here in Bell County, we have a pretty good economy, so we're just going to put up a wall and cut off our trafficking with everybody
else.
We're
not going to trade with Austin.
Right. That is a good way to create a depression and start wars. There's a world oil market, and we really would, the world would be a better place if we were able to fully participate in the world oil market.
Can I come at this from a different angle? In order to have a strategic plan that the government sets up where we are self-sufficient, where we produce all the energy that we require, the government would have to control all the companies mm-hmm. that are producing the oil. They would have to basically nationalize those companies and say Exxon.
Other countries have done that.
Yeah, I mean, Venezuela did it.
Worked really well for Venezuela.
Yeah, they're not having riots or anything right now. I mean, no problems going on. Wait, right. It's actually not looking so good in Venezuela. Because nobody's keeping up the oil production. They're having failures of equipment. But the idea here, most of the people that suggest the idea of having a strategic plan of total self-reliance in the United States on oil are also free business type people, as in free economy capitalists, not get the government involved. And they don't work well together.
No. The issue is that there is a strategic plan. That's why we have a strategic petroleum reserve. Depending upon the price and flows and demand for oil and oil products in different places, we really need to be part of a large system. Let me give you a point here. The United States has a lot of refineries, and we process a lot of everybody else's oil and ship it back to them at a significant profit, including Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, they get most of their oil refined in Texas.
If we basically said we're going to be self-sufficient in oil, and we could do that, we could. Matter of fact, I read.
We're net exporters now.
Well, yeah. I read a really interesting study. If you're willing to pay roughly $10 a gallon for gasoline, we could certainly put ourselves in that position. Now, why would you have to pay so much? A lot of the price of the gasoline that you put in your vehicle is based on the point that we manufacture gasoline for most of the world.
Yeah.
And we make a big profit manufacturing gasoline for most of the rest of the world. So if we said we're going to embargo oil, where we're going to keep all our oil in the United States again, which Congress has attempted to do, and we're going to strictly not do petroleum-related business with the rest of the world. Yeah, it would cost us the major oil companies like Exxon and so on would crater. The second issue is, it would be unconstitutional. The federal government, as Jake said, would have to seize control of all the companies, the multinational companies based in the United States that import and export petroleum products.
Say you can't, or either that or just say you cannot import and export. Even though you bought all that stuff for the primary purpose of export or import, you can't do it anymore.
And Texas, by the way, would have to have an income tax as a direct result, because we have a tremendous amount of tax revenue in the state of Texas from businesses that process everybody else's oil in the world.
Yeah, that's really what caused Houston to be as big as it is, number three size in the country, is because of oil. Now, they've got other things that have grown around it.
Which is a fascinating thing to me. It's conservatives who generally want to talk about this and talk it up and say that we should. And the same conservatives who say we ought to go to use gold for money, the whole point in, and I keep trying to remind people, when we used gold for money, when we were on the gold standard, it was illegal for an American citizen to own gold bullion.
Right. You could own coins, but those were...
But you could only a limited amount of coins.
And, you couldn't have bars.
Right.
Yeah.
And the point is, otherwise, people could speculate in gold. They did, and the Bunker family did in silver because it was legal to own silver. And the issue is the government would have to seize tight control of large sections of the economy that today are free market sections of the economy in order to go to the gold standard.
And to go into the oil standard.
And to do the same thing with oil. Again, the government would have to seize huge quantities of control. Right now, the government controls the paper money.
Now,
that's good.
Yeah,
I just assume they not control oil and they not control gold.
Stay
out of that business.
What is fascinating here is that the free market has reacted. Every time we have an oil shortage or the price of oil goes up, we either in the United States, not happening elsewhere, but in the United States, we develop new technologies to get it cheaper. That's what fracking was. The price of oil was up too high for too long. People didn't like it. That's not the reason why the research was done, though. It wasn't done because people didn't like the price. It was done because people liked the price. The oil companies that did the research on this really enjoyed having expensive oil, and they wanted to get more of it on the market, which is what brought the price of oil down.
We can't tell the Middle East to go pack sand, even though they're actually pretty good at it, or anything else, for a very good reason. A lot of what we buy in the United States comes from other places, and a lot of what we sell goes to other places. And that's one of the reasons we have a really healthy economy right now, is we happen to be better at that than anybody else in the world,
right,
apparently.
And so much better at it that if you're from Iran, who really does not like the United States, in order to sell your oil, you've got to accept U.S. dollars.
Yeah.
That's how good we are at it.
So,
it's the world currency in oil. It's all priced in our currency.
And so the point is that in the United States, we are dependent upon world commerce, and we like it that way, and that's why we have a big Navy. And the rest, even if we were energy independent, if we were in a position where we didn't need oil, it's conceivable that we want to switch microphones.
Yeah.
Then the rest of the world still needs the oil that comes out of them. Because once you leave the United States, the largest source of oil in the world becomes that area that you referred to, the Middle East, or more commonly now referred to as Southwest Asia. And instability in that area can create some real serious problems for the rest of the world. So the issue is that we are in a world economy. We are the primary traders in the world economy, and it is in our best interest that the world economy does well. So we protect the sea lanes, and we don't charge rent for that because it's very profitable to the United States to keep the sea lanes open.
Yeah, the tax revenue that keeps the Navy running comes a lot from multinational corporations that are based in the United States.
And it is in our best interest that the world not deteriorate into isolated places at war with each other, because eventually what we've discovered is no matter how remote the country is, where everything falls apart and a war cranks up, eventually it comes back to damage the United States. That's one of the things that's going on right now, and a fascinating debate, a lot of deep thought required. What the heck's going on in Syria? And the answer is the instability in Syria has the potential for throwing the entire world into chaos.
It's already happening to some extent, in that the refugee problem by itself, this isn't the military movement, the refugee problem is enough to destabilize peaceful countries.
I think it's the microphone, not the plug.
Yeah,
so you're going to have to change microphones.
Okay.
Anyway, that's a big problem. Now, coming back to stability and instability, we mentioned that I mentioned earlier that that Italy just borrowed money at a negative interest rate. What does that mean? What that there's a lot of meaning to that, and the most fundamental part of that meaning, at least in my opinion, Jake's changing microphones and some strange things are happening in here. An arm just suddenly roared, shot up towards the ceiling. One of the things that's fascinating with this, the United States 2-year Treasury note has been and is still trading above 2.1%. Now, what is that? Why is that significant? Why is that a big deal? When the rest of the world saw the stability of the United States as being less than ideal, rates were below 2% on the 10-year Treasury note. They're now not only above 2, which they've kind of bumped above on several occasions over the past several years, they're above 2.1. Now, that you really have to be a geek to even understand that there is such thing as a financial geek. But this is big stuff. What this means is the big money around the world, the consensus of people who have, including the sovereign wealth funds, or single white women, as the case may be.
Single white females.
Single white, yeah, SWF.
Yeah.
Have concluded that things are about to get a lot better here. Now, not coincidentally, we've been saying for several years that 2016 is the year in which the United States economy will start hitting on all cylinders. We're going through...
Or at least most of them.
I think all cylinders. I think we're going to reach full employment in 2016, where anybody who really wants a job can get a job. I think we're going to hit a point of, across the board, a recovery by just about every measure to where we were before the fall, in other words, before 2000, before the fall in every in economically that began in 2007. And there's a lot of adjustments still going on. A couple of things that are interesting. And I know I'm, excuse me if I'm boring you to tears, folks.
I'm crying over
but
here.
But the European Central Bank determined that Greek banks need 13.7 billion euros infusion in new capital. Sounds like bad news. No. This is when they stress tested the Greek banks against a worst case scenario. 13.7, and by the way, they have a fund with that much money at the European Union level designed to do just that. They are going to infuse those banks with this money. It's already agreed. But this is the point. It only takes $13.7 billion, I say only, to stabilize the Greek banks against a worst-case economic scenario that they can come up with. In the United States, for whatever it's worth, at the same time, the Federal Reserve reported that it's going to take eight of the 11 largest banks in the United States. They didn't say which was which. Financial institutions need $120 billion of additional capital to stabilize them against a worst case scenario.
Canace.
And this is the and even better yet. The Federal Reserve also reported those banks have the capability of establishing that additional reserve by simply shifting things around that they already have.
They have it in hand already.
And we have come so far since the meltdown and the pass of Sarbanes-Oxley and the other not Sarbanes,
financial regulatory
financial
reform
regulatory.
Act.
The issue is that we have in the United States and around the world learned from what happened in 2008 and 2009 to a truly remarkable degree. Now, what does it mean? It also, at the same time that you see the Federal Reserve announcing this, believe me, they told the banks well before they announced it publicly, you see Goldman Sachs spinning off and Morgan Stanley spinning off certain bond trading activities. You see the fact that there's going to be less and less money made from shuffling around high-risk derivatives you because see, the Federal Reserve simply won't allow it anymore.
General Electric has spun off GE Capital. I mean, that's a big thing.
The rest of GE Capital.
Yeah, the GE Capital became larger than GE at one point as far as size of monetary value. And that was just silliness. It was based on inflated prices of things that didn't make any sense.
Yeah, General Electric at one point was one of the largest banks in the world. By the way, Wells Fargo bought all that. And Wells Fargo is the only major bank that's continuing to expand its balance sheet. I won't go any further than saying what them guys are talking about. Anyway, so what I'm trying to say here, this is all good news. And it's good news. You really have to understand what's going on in the economy to see that
these little pieces fit together into a big picture, and the big picture looks really nice.
The reported shortages are saying, okay, to make it perfect against a worst-case scenario, we need this much money. But the money is already there, and it's already set aside in a fund.
And
all I got to say is, I guess just a couple of years ago, we thought the whole thing was going to fall apart.
Right, and just to give a separate scenario, worst-case scenario that is talked about here, it'd be like you live in Kansas and you're preparing for Hurricane Katrina. Well, it's unlikely that Kansas is going to have a Hurricane Katrina. That's just...
Okay,
we have a caller, though.
We have a caller on 773-1400. You're going to have to turn your radio down, though, because when I start to turn... Okay, there you go. Okay.
That's better.
Caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, it seems like the last 6 months, Wall Street was fretting because the Fed was going to raise interest rates, and then they didn't. And is it my imagination? But now they're saying, why don't you raise interest rates? Come on, come on. They're kind of encouraging it. What's going
right.
on?
Right, yeah, of course.
Good
question.
If we could understand that, we could get a Nobel Prize.
Right. Particularly when we're talking about the media referencing Wall Street, what you really get, there is no voice of Wall Street.
There isn't?
Wouldn't it be nice? But the media often says, Wall Street is saying, fill in the blank. So what they're really meaning by that is the last person I called that purports to work in some investment-related oriented or some way derived business said this.
It's like the official at NORAD who said helium has
inflammatory
effects.
If you talk to an options trader in Chicago about whether or not the Federal Reserve should raise interest rate, he's going to say, I don't think Wall Street cares that much about it. If you talk to a stock trader that's talking about one stock, he's not even going to reference the interest rates. If you're talking to a big bond trader, then they're going to talk about interest rates at great length.
It isn't the Wall Street people who are talking about it, the people who actually do it. It's at the end of the day, for starters, short-term market movements are random. After the random movement,
we come up with some good idea.
Right. Somebody says, here's why they did that today.
Because today I was wearing the color purple.
Oh, well, they won't take that.
No, that one's not good enough.
Although it might.
You should say something the Federal Reserve chairman was wearing the color purple.
There it is.
In the
past,
the last three times they've raised interest rates, they were wearing purple when it happened.
Yes. And the fact is that if you very carefully follow this issue of the Federal Reserve didn't raise interest rates, the market has gone down on several occasions dramatically because of fear the Federal Reserve would raise interest rates. But the last meeting they had where they didn't raise interest rates,
the reason for the market
decline on that day was reportedly because they didn't raise interest rates.
I can tell you the real reason why the market declined on that day.
Why?
Because more people wanted to sell stocks than wanted to buy stocks on that day.
Mm-hmm. There's more selling pressure than buying pressure. Now,
that's the reason why the market would ever go down or up. And
you can
use excuses to say this is why people were doing it.
There is a truth, though.
Go ahead.
The market does not like uncertainty and will be lower during periods of uncertainty versus periods of perceived certainty. If the Federal Reserve would just come out and say, one raise to 0.25, and very fact, we're going to flat say, barring some huge economic event, we're not raising interest rates for a year. Bingo, the market would shoot upward.
Okay, there's another factor in here. And that factor is probably the caller and the listeners of this program.
They factor?
They are a factor in the volatility of the market.
Well, when it comes to listeners, we might have a zero factor.
I'm not listening. Are you listening?
Not
so
me.
We have no factor in the market. But
right.
if there were a listener, if there was somebody out there listening and they had their own investments.
Well, you're an economist. Let's hypothesize
going
a
to
listener.
We're going to assume an investor here. Assume a listener and then assume that that listener is also an investor. Okay.
Ooh, you're getting kind of carried away, aren't you?
In a good economy, when things are going well, if you've got some good investments, you're getting close to retirement, and you decide to buy a bass boat, do you consult with someone that's on the trading floor at Wall Street or a major bond buyer?
No. I do.
We would do it, and if our clients oftentimes would tell us before they bought the bass boat, hey, we're going to have a withdrawal coming up at some point, so we prepare for it. Most investors don't do that. Instead, they call up and they say, I need $30,000, give it to me, because it's my money.
And, exactly.
And if a lot of people do that at the same time, it causes the market to go down, and the media goes, purple. Federal Reserve. Katrina. Well, bass boats. That's what's going on. Bass boats and houses and all of that happens randomly. If over a long period of time you can look at volatility in a good economy when people are confident, there is volatility in the stock market because people are buying as often as they're selling, sometimes more often than they're selling.
But there's more to this. When a lot of people buy bass boats at the same time.
Right.
And they liquidate money from their investment accounts, which causes the market to go down,
uh-huh.
which causes the traders to panic and to go down for several more days because they say something is going on here.
Somebody knows something.
But then at the end of the quarter, the bass boat manufacturing companies report record profits and the market goes up.
Oh, market goes. Look at the bass boat profits. I don't know. And they must not have been paying much attention to the market movements. They had good earnings somehow. They should have, and that's the speculation. If you're speculating at the day that the market goes down, you don't know how much of that was bass boat purchasing. You don't know how much of that was, when people say the market has dropped today as Apple has announced a new iPad. Well, why would that? That's so strange. Well, it could be that people are liquidating their shares to buy iPads. that's a crazy scenario, but it's a good one.
What we're trying to say is short-term market movements, including the event that occurred over the last 90 days when we had a sort of a mini correction, just like we had in 2011, are more or less random events, and we shouldn't pay any attention to them. Now,
well, we should pay attention to them, and just that we don't want to buy a bass boat when the market drops 10%. We could wait a little bit to buy the bass boat.
I don't know that that's a good idea either.
What, to buy a bass boat?
You don't buy the bass boat. Just because the market dropped, it all depends on whether you're going to borrow the money to buy the bass boat or whether you're
going to... Well, if you're going to do a big liquidation from your market portfolio and it just dropped 10%, you should probably say, I'm going to wait a little bit to do it.
Okay, well, this is what causes recessions. The market went down, so I'm not going to buy anything, which causes...
Or
earnings to go down, which causes the market to go down further, which makes people not buy anything.
Better solution is to know you're going to buy the bass boat and start allocating money for boat in advance.
Save the money.
And that's what we tell our clients, but,
unless interest rates are effectively at zero in your savings account,
the
which
loan
case,
is pretty fine, too.
You can borrow the money to buy the bass boat. It all depends on which way you want to go. But the issue here is that short-term movements in the market.
Bass boats.
I was saying we have a very consistent seasonal short-term movement in the market in that sometime during the summer when it gets hot, the market has a tendency to go down. And then once the weather cools off nicely, the market has a tendency to go up. And that coincides. There have been several studies where they noted that the senior decision makers at the trading firms on Wall Street leave town and they say, don't lose money, but don't buy anything either. And they leave town. And when they get back, the market has a tendency, they typically return in October, by the way. And as they are back in their seats, they gradually start buying stuff, and then the market tends to come up by the end of October. And from there on through the end of the year and into the early months of the following year, the market tends to rise. Now, that's not 100%. You can't set up market timing on it, but there sure is a consistent pattern there.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I'm going to say this. If you're a bass boat company out there, we're open to taking endorsements. We're not taking any right now, but if you would like to pay us to talk about bass boat purchases more...
That would be a conflict of interest.
Well, then we would have to say no. Yeah, we wouldn't take that. Sorry.
So, speaking of conflicts of interest, we are on a commercial radio station called KTEM, and this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and we want to support free enterprise. And for you to support free enterprise, you too are going to have to give something, and that is, if you're going to stay listening to us, you're going to have to listen to a series of commercials where people have paid to take some of your time to get you to try to buy something.
Are there any bass boat commercials in there?
I have no idea. But we're going to, there's going to be a bunch of commercials, and there's probably going to be at least one of them that repeats, so don't worry about that. We'll be back on the other side of these commercials with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and Jake McClure. And we're almost out of time for this second hour on October 31st. I do want to say something very general. I have a series of articles. I'm not going to dwell in the articles on this. But there's a whole series of warning articles in the Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, Barron's, about schemes or ideas that seem to be perfectly reasonable and rational. Kinder Morgan down 39%. What does that mean to you? Well, those were master limited partnerships, which were guaranteed, surefire, absolute, safe way that you could generate high income. Does that sound familiar? Down 39%. You start down the list of things out there, they're everywhere. Municipal bonds that are being sold at a 4% yield. There's a warning in the Wall Street Journal about that. Why is there a warning about that? 4% municipal bond. Well, really, the yield to maturity on some of those municipal bonds with a 4% yield, by the time you factor in the sales commission and everything else, the yield to maturity is zero. Yeah, you get 4%, but you're getting, all you're doing is getting your own principal returned to you between now and the maturity of the bond. The same thing is true in some bond funds. The same thing is true in a lot of things. Right now, and it seems like there's an overwhelming number of these events going on right now, there's a lot of people, and you just heard some, who are promising you investment success if you do something where you give them your money.
And the people, that when you say you just heard some, those of you that are listening online may not have heard the same advertisements, but they were chock full of new and interesting ways of
getting rich easily,
quickly, without risk, and yeah, those are scary.
So the point is that there's a lot of that going on, a lot of it going on, and some of it is being sold by reputable brokers. Tremendous number of findings from the financial meltdown, where major brokerage firms are getting huge multi-million-dollar fines. Their brokers, as it turns out, the so-called financial advisors, did not understand what the alternative investments, as they called them, with high income and surefire security and everything else about them, all these wonderful things, they didn't understand. This is what the FINRA found out. They did not understand what they were selling themselves. They had no clue. Well, that didn't keep them from waxing enthusiastic about it because they got high commissions. And there's going to be more and more of that. I'm going to forecast this as we move forward. We're moving, in my opinion, this is Jeff. I think Jake probably agrees with me.
Right, I do.
We are moving into the second leg of a secular bull market. And during the second leg of a secular bull market, it isn't fear that drives people's reactions.
It's greed.
It's greed. It's, I'm afraid I'm going to miss something here. I need to invest now.
And other people are making money and I'm not. Did you hear that ad where the guy was talking from his bedroom with the recording and he knows how to buy and sell houses? I should be able to do that because, wait a minute.
And so
that's the feeling, though, that you're missing out on something.
The thing to be afraid of right now is the thing that people are going to be very enthusiastic about, which is the ability to make a lot of money in a short period of time in an ever-rising something or another where you can make profit. There was a book published in the second leg of the last bull market that sums it up very nicely as Wealth Without Risk. And the guy who wrote the book and published the book had already previously been banned from the securities industry for fraud. And he published this best-selling book and was on a lot of shows on television talking about how there's no need, you could do all these wonderful things. And of course, the book on every page had his 800 number, where he'd be more than happy to take your money to show you how a person can get rich on your money.
I can tell you.
And he did.
I can tell you how to get rich.
But he's in prison now.
I can tell you how to get rich quickly. All you have to do is write a book telling people how to get rich quickly, giving you money to do it. So if you do that right, you get rich quickly. Maybe the people that read your book don't, but you can get rich quickly that way.
Another example, if you actually do, if you do Google how hedge fund performance 2015, you will discover it has been, you know, back when hedge funds were making a lot of money, they obviously were making a lot of money, but the hedge funds are doing terrible. They basically bet against commodities. They bet against emerging markets. They bet against a lot of things by borrowing a lot of money. And they are getting the snard beat out of them. So if you think, well, man, if I was in a hedge fund, I could make a lot of money. Well, let me tell you, they charge 20% of profits.
What is snard, by the way?
It's the stuff that comes out of you when you get beat.
Okay, beating the snard.
Okay. Yes. And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead. Hello.
I was wondering if you could tell me your thoughts on electric utilities over the next 3 to 5 years. I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Go ahead.
All right.
Thoughts on electric utilities.
Utilities and bonds are probably not the best place to be in right now. Interest rates fluctuating have a big impact on utilities as well as bonds, and it is likely, even though the Fed didn't raise interest rates this time, long-term interest rates are what I'm talking about. Long-term interest rates are likely to rise over the next 5 years or so. I wouldn't want to be involved in utilities and bonds in that process. Now, I could go into more detail, but we only have about a minute and a half left in the
program.
And
just simply say, going into a single sector of the market is dangerous, even if you are a professional. The issue is that if you have a broadly diversified portfolio that maybe includes some electric utilities in it, and if you're smart enough to put one of those things together, you should be making 7 figures a year managing a mutual fund. If you're not, I would say broadly diversified mutual fund, unless you just want to play games and gamble in the market.
Right.
That's it in a nutshell.
So we are about out of time for this week. I'm not going to be here next week. I'm going to be out looking at water and trees and smelling wood fire. And you may be here, though.
Yes, I'd
be here.
I don't know.
All by yourself? Or,
right, I don't know. Whatever. Well, depends on the phase of the moon.
Right.
The
phase of the moon may be dark, actually. So you may or may not be here for that.
I suspect I will be here, though.
Okay. So anyway, one of us or neither of us will be here next week, which is the case, you could say.
And you
say,
won't know until you listen.
Right. So if you would like to contact us off the air, we do actually talk to people for a living, not just for the fun of it on weekends. So if you would like to talk about us, about investing and so on, you can reach us locally at
947-1111.
You can reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can email us there, listen to podcasts. Until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
KTM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.